Welcome to Consider This Program. We keep people from making bad financial decisions. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer. If you need to call in to set up a meeting, I'll be the first one that you talk to.
And that is just a wonderful thing. Before we get, even though this is the month of May and racing, and this is why I like NASCAR, there is no NASCAR race this weekend. Do you know why, Angie?
Why?
Because it's Mother's Day. And the NASCAR boys know better than messing with Mother's Day. I believe they take two weekends off a year, but I know it's this one. I think it's Easter and Mother's Day that they don't mess with, which is, if I'm going to be a race fan, it would be NASCAR. Really don't do much of that anymore at all. But to my mother and to my beautiful wife, happy Mother's Day tomorrow. It is that weekend. It's happy birthday to my daughter. Happy congratulations to my son-in-law who's graduating from Anderson University this week. I have too much going on.
You do.
So what are you doing for Mother's Day, Angie?
Well, this is the first time in probably 7 years that my daughter Ava has not been in travel ball. Every single year there's been a tournament over.
So they're not like NASCAR. They do travel ball.
Yes.
Yeah,
they feel like you can't wait to see another tournament. So they do give you a flower or something.
There you
go.
But
it's usually a whole weekend thing. So I'm really looking forward to being able to do something with the family where both my adult child and my child still at home can be involved.
Wonderful. And what are you doing for your wonderful wife, Ken?
You know, good question. Haven't even thought about that yet.
You might want to get that on the checklist.
Yeah, I know.
That's
it's close.
Do not.
We always do a brunch somewhere.
Yeah.
Take the kids out. Get them out of the house. Unlock them from their bedroom.
See, I feel so bad about going out to eat on Easter because I don't want to support other people having to work on, you know, it irritates me. Mother's Day does not bother me. So whether or not we wind up someplace to eat out on Mother's Day or not, we will have to wait and see. But nonetheless, it is an important part of life that needs to be dealt with, and we certainly don't want to forget it. I find myself so many times being like Ken and getting there at the last moment and going, oh, yeah, I shoulda. And we don't want to shoulda, right? We want to.
Well, I send my mom flowers. What my kids are going to do for their mom, I don't know yet. Probably nothing, so I'll have to take them out.
So, yes, you've got to do something.
So I've got to figure it out for
them,
too.
You've got to do something for your kids.
Yeah.
I did that for Barb every year. So, I think she knew I bought the card. But, you know.
Of course, my son goes, hey, Jess, you take care of it. I'll sign my name to the card.
Yeah, there
yes.
you go. It's a brilliant way. Hey, you're listening to Consider This Program. We help keep people from making bad financial decisions. And if you want to do this on your own, enjoy the show. If you're looking for a fiduciary, that's our business. Give us a call, 800-928-4001. We'll take a break and get right into the show.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own if they were in your situation. There are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This Program with Joe Clark.
Welcome to Consider This Program. We keep people from making bad financial decisions. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
And Angie would be the first person that you would talk to if you called in, if you needed to schedule a meeting at the Financial Enhancement Group. 800-928-4001. We ask people to send in questions that they want covered on the show. You guys listen. We get questions all the time. We change the names to protect the innocent. But we're going to try to go through these four questions pretty quickly just to make sure you get good answers. So, Angie, what's the first one?
Okay. This is from Dan. And Dan says, I understand that a Roth IRA fund is not tax exempt. What I don't understand is how does this differ from a regular taxed investment?
So a Roth IRA is not tax exempt in the way you would think about it. What we say is that it's not tax deferred, meaning you paid the taxes on the money that you put in. So that you may be talking about when the money comes out that it's tax exempt. That would be true. You don't have to pay the taxation on it. When you buy something outside of a Roth IRA, you have what's called basis in it. When you put money into it to buy a stock or a CD or a bond, that money you've already paid taxes on. You only have to pay taxes either on the interest or the growth when you sell it. So it is a different thing. We prefer to have tax diversification, which means all three. Money that is taxed after tax, which is the second thing in your question, tax-free, that's your Roth, and then the third would be tax deferred. Having a mixture of those three is a great way to go. Ken, number two.
Question number two is, my father passed away October 2018. He and my mother owned a second home which has approximately $250,000 in equity. She had a realtor evaluate and write a formal letter within a few weeks of Dad's passing, which stated the approximate market value of the home on the date of his death in order to get a step up in basis. There's three parts to this question. One, does she need a formal appraisal? Two, where does the letter or appraisal go now or to be filed with to ensure that some point in the future she can hopefully avoid most capital gains on the property tax? And question three, can she do this on her primary residence as well?
So she's going to keep the house is what it sounds like.
Yes.
So when you hear the word step up in basis, let's say mom and dad paid $500,000 for the house, now has $250,000 of equity that's in the house. She got a step up in basis when her dad died. So her basis is fair market value.
Right.
If she's going to keep the house and she expects it to highly appreciate, you know, like it's on Tippecanoe or someplace where property values are going up, you probably do want to have an appraisal so that you can have it in the file to tell the IRS that your basis really was $500,000. I don't see a lot of people do that, but it is clearly something you can do. Can you do it on your own house? The answer is it doesn't serve you any purpose because you're not dead today, right? The appraisal would be for your family, your kids, because they would get a step up in basis on your property if something were to happen to you, right?
So the other question is, where does she send the letter or appraisal to make sure at some point she can avoid most capital gains in the property?
Just needs to keep that document so that she's got a formal appraisal that shows you have to have a valuation that's done pretty quickly after somebody passes away, but it's not in the next 30 days. And you, again, unless their estate was over $5.5 million, there are no federal estate taxes that you really have to worry about. And if it's in Indiana, there are no state income tax or inheritance taxes. Angie, number three.
I have a question from Jan, and her question, it says, my question is on behalf of my sister. We'll call her Marcia.
Okay.
She took a medical retirement She took a medical retirement in 2013 and was eligible for a PERF, where she took a
That's the state of Indiana's retirement plan.
Okay. She took a lump sum.
Okay.
And paid her 20% off the top in taxes.
Okay, pause. Everybody says that and it's never true. Okay?
Okay.
Everybody says that and it's never true. If you take money directly out of a retirement plan, whether you make $100,000 a year, $1 million a year, or $10,000 a year, the federal government mandates that that Department of Labor plan withhold 20% for taxes. Okay? Doesn't mean she paid it. It means it was taken out. Right? Sent to the government. And when she files taxes, if she's not in the 20% bracket, she got a massive refund. If she was under the 20% bracket, she even owed more money. Okay?
Well, so at this point, she's receiving $400 monthly. What she did not understand is that she would pay and file taxes on this yearly because she never received a statement like a W-2. Only recently was she made aware of this when she went to the BMV to file for a lost title, and the state said that they would hold her title until these taxes are paid. Can she arrange for payments? She's 69 and just doesn't understand.
Very, very, very sad. But yeah, that income is fully taxable. I'm sorry. There's not a lot you can do about it. There was a form that was sent. It was not a W-2. But when you get income that comes from an annuity or a pension plan, you do get a statement that shows what your benefits are. And we live in what our tax system is called self-reporting, and you're obligated to report those numbers. So it's not hard to get it caught up. There will be a little penalty, and then you have to pay it. And the state of Indiana, sadly, is harder to deal with than the federal government when you're behind in your taxes. So my heart goes out. One of my horror stories that I believe is in the book. There's so many, you know, my passion is to take care of people so that they don't make inefficient financial decisions that lead to frustration and devastation. And an 84-year-old son-in-law didn't listen to me, along with a broker down in Tennessee. And at 84, she had to declare bankruptcy because they didn't understand the tax code and didn't listen to me. And he wanted to sell a son-in-law an annuity, and the son-in-law was clearly brighter than I was. So at 84, mother-in-law got to declare bankruptcy. Just a beautiful thing. Oh, I'm so sorry. I wish I could help. Ken, number four.
Question four. I am 64 years old and would like to think about retiring, but have some high interest payments. Would it be beneficial to get a distribution from my 401k from my employer and pay those off and have less cash going out each pay?
You know, that's a question that really involves some internal planning. So you've got two things that are going on with that question, Ken. One, whoever that is has got to assume what their future tax rate will be, right? So let's say they're making $80,000 a year now and they're going to retire living on Social Security and not a whole lot of other money. And that's typically what would happen if somebody had high interest payments that were due, right? So their tax bracket could be substantially lower upon retirement than today. If they take the money out of the 401k or out of their retirement accounts to pay off that debt, then they have to actually deal with the full taxation on it. Now, one thing I would tell you to get away from the Angie conversation over the 20% withholding, if you're in the 20% bracket, Ken, then let them withhold the 20%. But if you transfer that money to an IRA and then take money out of the IRA, there is no 20% mandatory withholding, and you can determine what needs to be held by the IRS. So if you're dealing with credit cards that are 15, 18, 20%, I would definitely move it to an IRA, use the money that I would have paid in taxes to eliminate those debts at 20%, and then figured out what to do about taxes at the end of the year. That was one part of the question. What was the second part? The taxes were the first part that I hit.
So oh, it's just taxes and...
Would it be wise to do it now? If you're going to do it out of an IRA and eliminate those payments for certain. But it all really depends on how long you're going to work. And it depends on how high the interest rates are, right?
Right.
I mean, if they're the high teens, then that's probably a good call at 64.
True.
If they're 6 or 7%, maybe not. Hey, you're listening. Consider this. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger and Angie Kinzer. Give us a call, 800-928-4001. If you want to do it on your own, that's your business. If you're looking for a fiduciary, that's our business. We'll be right back. Welcome to Consider This Program. We keep people from making bad financial decisions. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer, the first person you call or talk to if you call in for a meeting.
Absolutely. 800-928-4001. I try to tell people, you know, we do this show truly to help you make better financial decisions. If you want to do it on your own, I hope it gives you a roadmap. Please, please work with somebody, though, in the professional space. There's a lot of confusion, and this is just really the tip of the iceberg. And if you're looking for a fiduciary, we are more than happy to apply. That's what our team of 28 people do. We manage a little over $420 million for families in 31 states, most of which reside here in Indiana. So we got a question, Ken, and this is all about you.
Uh-oh, I like that.
Well, you're the only one of it. Well, no, Ava's going to go to college. I'm the only one well, Kendra is in college, but she's married, so she kind of takes care of it her own. So we got a question, and the question was essentially this. It's not one that we deal with a lot, but it is a question out there that it matters a great deal to people. So Ken and I and Angie all have to fill out this wonderful thing called a FAFSA form. I almost would rather go to the dentist than ever see that form
again. I agree with that, Joe.
When my 18-year-old daughter asked what my income was, I was not happy. I said, you know, we're not going to get anything, and you're going to a private university, right? I'm not filling it out. She goes, Dad, you have to or I can't go. Oh, I was livid. I was just beside myself.
That is true.
And apparently it is true. So the question we got is, I'm saving for my kids' college. Which is better for me to do? To actually put money in college savings or to pay down debt?
Well, that's a good question. I would say if it's debt, what's the interest rate on the debt? And if it's a savings account like a 529 plan, what's your annual return?
See, I like the way you're thinking, but it's really not the answer for some people. So what do you think, Ange?
I kind of would have went the same way. I would have wondered, you know, do I generally owe on my state taxes? So is that something I could use?
Now, why does that matter?
Because you can write that completely off the bottom line.
Write what off completely off the bottom line?
The contributions up to a certain amount in the state of Indiana that you've set aside in a 529 plan.
So what she's alluding, no. Don't ever say that again. I'll have to flip you in the forehead.
Okay.
529 is a federal code. Okay? So
College
Vanguard
Choice
has a 529. Other companies have 529s. The Indiana College Choice, it's one approved by the state of Indiana. If you put in up to $5,000, you get up to a 20% tax credit. So $1,000, period. And it doesn't matter what income level you are. So one of the ways to think about this is the difference between a coupon and a deduction, right? So if Ken's tax bracket is higher than mine and I get a deduction on my taxes, he gets more benefit because his income is higher, right? On the other hand, if we go to Payless and we're buying a gallon of milk and we both have a dollar coupon, it doesn't matter if I'm only buying milk or if I've got $500 in my cart, we're getting the same whammy, right? So a coupon is equal. A deduction is worth more to people who are at a higher tax bracket. This is a state tax credit. So we're talking about savings. You putting money in, and Ken, you should be doing this, by the way, for your kids, right? Only do it for one, $5,000. You get a $1,000 state tax credit. Angie hit it a second ago. I've watched people put money in the College Choice 529 who didn't pay $1,000 to the state of Indiana, right? The credit didn't work, right? So, and this doesn't have to be from earned income, right? So you can pull it from other places if you want to, okay? The way I interpreted this question, however, and Ken, you actually, I'm very proud of you. You set it up exactly right. It's called opportunity cost. What would I get if I did this? What would I get if I did this? So he said, what's my interest that I'm paying on my debt versus what's my expectation of return on my asset if I put money in the College Choice, and that would let me determine which way I should go. And if you're middle America and you're doing okay, that's the right answer. Generally, when I get this question, somebody's struggling a little bit, right? And they're trying to help their mom. And the very first person I saw, or they're trying to help their kid. The very first person I saw in the financial services industry was a single mom school teacher in Indianapolis, Indiana. And in 1982, she bought. That means she was working with somebody who sold products. She bought a 403B annuity. So an annuity because the sales guy told her that she could put money in it to send her kid to college. And he didn't lie. I'm seeing her in 88. And the problem is she didn't get the memo in 86. The tax code had changed. So here's a single mom putting money in a 403B to save money for her kid's college. The tax code changes. And what she'd put in the last 2 years, she couldn't get out without a 10% penalty and a full taxation. And that just breaks my heart that kind of stuff goes on. That's why you really have to pay attention to the process. But my point is this. If you put money, so Ken, if you put money in College Choice for your son who will be in college, your daughter's already in college, when you do the FAFSA, you have to list it as an asset, right? Which reduces some of the money they're eligible to borrow, some of the stuff that some of the benefits that they can get. If it's in their name, the same situation happens. Interestingly enough, if it's in your parents' names, her grandparents' names, it doesn't go on the FAFSA the same way. It's very, very interesting in terms of how that works. So here's what I have found. Nobody cares about how much debt you're in, right? When they look to see if you qualify for aid or stuff, they're looking at two things. How much do you have in assets and how much do you have in income? Right? So if you're really, really in a challenging position here, right? If you've only got a few dollars to work with, if you pay down debt, right? You're eliminating that debt, freeing up some of your income. that has no consequence at all on FAFSA. It just makes your month-to-month life better. If you took it and you put it into savings, you're actually reducing the amount of money that your child may be eligible for, and you still have the debt when they're going to school. Okay? So depending on where you are in life, how that looks, you may want to go to debt. Yeah, Ange.
There's a couple of limitations on that college choice plan, too. I mean, if you have only one child and they don't decide to go on to college, you might have to figure out how you can use it yourself. Or
you can pass it down the bloodline. You can transfer it to any beneficiary. So you could transfer it to your son, your grandchild, when they pop out, if it doesn't get used. But what Angie said is right. I've heard a lot of people say you can use a college choice plan like an IRA or something like that. You cannot. It doesn't matter if you don't take the money out till 80. It's still subject to a 10% penalty upon the growth, right?
And I'm not sure exactly what you can have for holdings, but they might be limited compared to if you had that money in a Roth or something else.
Some of that, in some ways, those assets all get added up, but you're very, very correct. Just pay attention to it. There are people who are FAFSA professionals. I am not one of those people. We have Grant Sullivan on our team who loves to help people with college planning. That's where I would direct the question to if he were here today. But anyhow, tough question, and I understand it. What an expensive endeavor. Purdue is on year, I think, 6 or 7 of keeping tuition straight-lined. You may want to keep that in mind as you're thinking about places to go, said as a previous professor at Purdue University. Anyhow, 800-928-4001. Go to visit us at yourlifeafterwork.com. You got a question or comment, I'm more than happy to answer it. Take your email. We'll change the name to Protect the Innocent, put it on the show, and do our best to help solve your problems. Again, it's 800-928-4001. We'll be right back. Welcome to Consider This Program. We help people keep from making bad financial decisions. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer, the one you'll normally talk to or talk to first when you call in for an appointment.
Happy to have you there on the lines, Angie. She can answer all of your questions. And as I said before, if you want to know the questions to ask, I had somebody that was in a meeting with us probably 2 months ago and said, I don't even know what questions I should be asking you. I said, you know, that's a darn fair point. It's a double curse of knowledge. I don't know what I don't know, but I don't know what you don't know. So I came up with a list of questions that I thought you should ask. And whether you're talking to us at the Financial Enhancement Group or whether you're talking to somebody else, if you would like that list or to watch the video that Angie and I put together, just give her a call. And you can watch it's probably a 15, 18 minute video clip, and we will answer those questions for you. Angie knows my passion is dealing with the fact that we will all exit. But she had some questions. Apparently, I used big words, and you want to break them down.
Well, so a few weeks ago, you talked about defined benefit versus defined contributions, and that's kind of always generated questions with me anyway, growing up in an era where my grandparents and parents worked for General Motors and you just automatically got a pension, you know, when you went there to work. I didn't. I started in the workforce in the late 80s. So I've never had a pension. I've maybe had 4, maybe 5 jobs since, you know, out of college. And it's always been a 401k or 403b or something to that source. So something that I contributed to on my own. So I tried to look into it. I found an article that the Heritage Foundation had that's called Not Your Grandfather's Pension and Why Defined Benefit Pensions Are Failing. And so I was like, okay, I need to know more about this because all I do know is that when the 401k came in and took over, that's kind of when the benefit plans fell by the wayside.
They begin to become less, less in number. They didn't fall to the wayside. Eli Lilly still has a defined benefit plan today. They also allow people to contribute to a 401k plan. Okay, so they have both, but they didn't fall away. So When you said, you used big words that you're comfortable with. So what is a pension, Angie?
Just an amount of money that you receive in addition to your salary.
So does the government print it? Where does it come from?
It comes from the employer that sends you a check.
Okay, it does not. Okay. So where does your pension come from? Ken's eligible for a pension when he's 65. Where does it come from?
The pension fairy? I don't know.
The pension fairy. There you go. So in Ken's case, Ken's got a pension that'll come from the NFL, right? But the NFL, and you get these financials every year by mm-hmm. law. Believe me, your union reps get them, right? And there's money that's set aside that is not part of the NFL. It's a whole other thing. And it probably says the NFL pension fund or something of that nature. And it is properly funded. Okay. So when your grandfather got his pension check, what happened is there were people behind, and this is what just sends me off the deep end, right? There were people behind this curtain that you couldn't see. Okay. People didn't understand it. And in all fairness, they still don't understand it today, right? But there was this curtain. And on one side of the curtain, there needs to actually be a triangle. I mean, think the ark and Moses, I guess, is the best way to think about this, to keep it in a church format. But, you know, you've got the Holy of Holy space. And outside of that, or inside of that, you've got people like Adam, my chartered market, or my chartered financial analyst. You've got people like Andrew, our chartered market technician. You've got people like me who have spent our life, right, way over 50 years between the three of us, managing money, and we do it. And out of that money, we send you a check every month, okay? The government doesn't print it, but it comes from the 401k or the pension part of the company. It's separate. Those assets aren't mixed. Now, what happens, and you'll get stuff like this that comes from the NFL, Ken, what happens is the committee meets, usually in a corporate America, so think General Motors for your grandpa. There's a board of directors, and the pension fund manager, the Adam of the world, right, goes to the board of directors and says, our returns were 6% this year. And the actuary sitting there next to Adam, and the actuary says, based on the life expectancy of the members, you needed to earn 5.5%, right? And everybody in the room goes, woohoo, right? Because now we have a credit. Now we have a credit. So you won't remember this. I only remember it because I'm sick in the head. But in 1989, the cover of the Anderson Herald Bulletin said GM pension fund, strongest in the country, right? In 1990, New Year's headline, GM pension fund, $3 billion short, right? What happened? 89 was not a bad year in the market, by the way. So don't go there. What happened? Where'd the $3 billion go? Well, the actuary sitting at the meeting said, the average retiree is not living 7 years. They're living much, much longer. And based on our numbers, you've got to put more money into the kitty, right? So now General Motors has profit, right? And with that profit, they can typically buy back shares, reinvest in new companies, send out dividends, and all of a sudden they just got an expense added to the bottom line where they had to put more money inside of the pension or be underfunded. And when you're underfunded, Angie, you have to pay an insurance premium to a thing called the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And fortunately for many people who retired from parts of General Motors, they paid that premium because their checks now do come from the PBGC because the pension fund failed, right? It got taken over, okay? So inside of that thing, you had people like Adam and Andrew and me managing money professionally, and the companies didn't like the fact that they couldn't control the rate of return. The companies didn't like the fact that they couldn't control how long Ken was going to live. And so they said, here, we're just going to give it to you and as the employee. So in 1980, in the Keogh Act, we really started to create these financial plans. People started to shut down defined benefit plans. And they went to you and said, Angie, here's what we're going to do for you. We're going to give you a defined contribution plan. You get to put money into the plan. As the employer, most of us put money in for you. But I have a known obligation based on your income, based on the deals of the plan. Doesn't matter how long you live. Doesn't matter how you invest the money. I'm going to give it to you. And the problem is you don't have an Adam. You don't have an Andrew. And accumulation is easy. right? Because all you do is stick it in. And if the market does well, you end up doing well. Distribution is the hard part. And they didn't give you a rule book. And so that's why we have these families who show up at our offices all the time and go, okay, I did a good job getting it out. I did the heavy lifting. But how in the world do I get it out without losing it all to taxes? How? What do I do now? Because the game has changed. And it is clearly involving both taxes and investing. And it's a much longer term situation. So you opened up a can of worms and ran out of time, Angie. So we'll have to revisit this one a lot. But it is this is what has driven me since I started. The first time I saw somebody with $600,000 who had no intentions of taking the money out, and that was early 90s. It's kind of like I realized this is not the way everybody thought it was going to go. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger, Angie Kinzer. You got a question or comment? Shoot us an email, considerthis@yourlifeafterwork.com. We'll be right back. Welcome to Consider This program, where we keep people from making bad financial decisions. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer, the person you'll most likely talk to if you call in to set up a meeting.
There you go. Hey, I will tell you, it is our objective to keep you from making bad financial decisions, but obviously we can't take care of you if we don't know you or don't see you. So give Angie a call, 800-928-4001. The intent of the show is not to be all-encompassing and to give you advice and guidance. It's to make you aware of things that you might not be aware of. So as always, we will do our best to give you good information, but things do change. Economic conditions, tax code. If you've listened to this show or many shows, we talk about required minimum distributions. Ken, what age is a required minimum distribution?
70 and a half.
Yeah, except there's this bipartisan bill in Congress right now. I didn't even know, Angie, we had bipartisan anymore, right? You know, that's when two sides get along, and they're talking about making it age 72. So that is not passed. It's not there yet. But just to let you know that it is one of those things that could be moving along. So things change. When my book comes out, one of the things, and somewhere in the next 60 days, one of the things in the front will be to have you register your resource. That's on you. I can't control when you get the book if you don't register it. But what will happen is there's things in there that will change, like that 70 and a half rule. And so if you've registered your resource, then it's on us to send you an email to say, hey, this has changed, so that you know that you've got good data, that you're not like the school teacher we talked about who bought something, thought something, things changed, and nobody notified her. So what we do in this final conversation of the show is really go through and relive a little bit of the thing. So we went through four questions up front. Angie, you got one of those in front of you you want to go over?
Well, I know that we talked about a Roth IRA and the exemption.
Right.
They used the word exempt, and you clarified and said it's actually deferred.
No, it's not deferred. It's tax-free.
Oh, tax-free, right. On the Roth. But right. She said, okay.
And tax-exempt, depending on how she was structuring, could be right. When you take the money out, it's exempt from taxation. So I've never heard of anybody talk about a Roth being tax-exempt, but that part is fair. And she asked the question about what other kind of monies. Ken, do you remember another one of them that we went over?
No.
No. It's only been 25, 30, 45 minutes.
I know.
All right, what's the next one?
This is the one where the father passed away and he and my mother owned the second home.
Ah, yes. That was really a good one. And if you've inherited any assets, you may want to go back to that segment and re-listen to it. It's the very first conversation we had today, talking about step-up and basis and whether you should get an appraisal for a house. If you inherit farm ground that you're not going to sell, or if you inherit a house, the majority of the time you're going to fill out a 706, which is your federal estate tax form. And all of the valuations really go there. And so you may or may not need an appraisal, but if you're worried about somebody saying that you're kind of cooking the books or playing with them, that's where that form goes. And I didn't, when you ask in the first segment, Ken, where she files that, it goes with the 706, and then they have a copy of it later on. We went from that to college debt and savings. Should you pay down debt, or should you invest in a savings account for your kid's college? And it really depends where you are on the financial spectrum. If your income is high, then you compare exactly what Ken said. you know, what is my opportunity? What's the interest rate on my debt? What's the opportunity to earn in my investments? And what's the tax credit if I use the Indiana College Choice Plan? For those of you that are in Indiana, obviously it doesn't work in other states. But you can get up to a 20% tax credit, up to $5,000. So you can get a $1,000 credit. Make sure that you actually do owe that much in state taxes. 529 plans are interesting, but it's a good way to go. If you're on the lower financial area, you're probably better off paying off debt as opposed to adding to savings. Then we went to Angie on distribution, and we broke down what happened to the pension funds. You had a whole litany of questions.
I did.
And someday we'll do that whole little show so that we can get through all of them, because it's important to understand where they came from. I always will tell you to ask what the genesis is. You know, I don't know how many new people you meet with your wife, but how often do they ask you how you guys met?
Oh, a lot. That's kind of the one single question you always get in a conversation when you meet a new couple or somebody.
Yep. I was just this last weekend. Somebody said, how'd y'all meet? Right. I would do that with your investments. How'd y'all meet? I do that with everything. We call it the FEG Sigma. You know, how did we get here? Why when we started this, did we think it would be a good idea? Right. So that you know, and you can clarify way up front where it is you're trying to go. So, you know, I go back to the genesis of why we have defined contribution plans in much more fashion than we have defined benefit plans, the pension funds that we talked about. And the elephant in the room is we removed the risk from the employer and placed it firmly on the back of the employee. And, you know, everybody thought it was an okay, it was a cool idea and it would work. And I strongly beg to disagree as I see what happens to people in life. And then we move to my favorite conversation, where we begin to talk about the differences in gender and investing. And I will just fess up right from the very beginning. I have a hard time putting people in a box. So saying you're a woman, so this, or you're a man, so this is very challenging for me. So if I didn't sound genuine and authentic like I normally do, it's because that's not my favorite conversation. But there are some things, right, Ange?
There are, and since we've been around for so long and experienced pretty much every situation possible, even in the 7 years that I've been here, we have seen where there's a loss of a spouse, the other spouse is suddenly completely at a loss as to what to do or what the situation is, and honestly, it wasn't even in the loop of bills or investments or anything like that.
And it does happen. And in all fairness, it usually is the female that's the one left behind. Your life expectancy is longer than mine. It usually is that case. But we've got a lot of situations where the female is much more in tune to what's going on than the male, especially as people get older, because, you know, you're going to be left holding the bag. You know, my knees are starting to break down, or, you know, it's Joe's just not acting the way Joe did once before. You know, now I got to catch up quick and get my college education. But there is a difference in life expectancy, income, but the knowledge base and the desire or interest in learning about money changes with different people. And it's not just male or female. It is an issue with all people. You just don't know what you don't know. And that's why we do this show, is to try to help you better understand. Again, if you want to do this on your own, that's your business. If you want a fiduciary, that's ours. Look forward to meeting you. Have a great week.